From a kid's point of view, some questions were asked of some children regarding the matter of marriage. An 8-year-old girl was asked, "What is the proper age to get married?"
Did you push the button? Good man.
She answered, 84. Because at that age, you don't have to work anymore, and you can spend all your time loving each other. A 9-year-old girl was asked how to tell if two adults eating at a restaurant are in love. And she answered, "It's love if they order one of those desserts that are on fire. They like to order those because it's just like their hearts that are on fire." Another 9-year-old was asked, what are most people thinking when they say, "I love you"? And the response was, "The person is thinking, yeah, I really do love him, but I hope he showers at least once a day." And then a 7-year-old boy was asked how to make love endure. And the boy answered, "Spend most of your time loving instead of going to work." And an 8-year-old boy, he was asked that same question, how to make love endure. And he said, "Be a good kisser. It might make your wife forget that you never took out the trash."
I like this kid.
The 3 R's of marriage: roles, realists, and romanticists. We have to figure out what our roles are in marriage. And we have to take a realistic approach to marriage, which can't leave the romance out. On Wednesday, I said that I was going to identify 4 key areas of marriage. And counselors, which are sometimes pastors, and some men have a real ability to help individuals, couples, and you'll often find they have a heavy counseling ministry. But then some people, they'll go out and get trained in counseling. Dale, in taking his courses, one of the courses was very extensive in counseling. Well, that will not only help him when he's one-on-one with someone, but just as he's dealing even with a group and knows what that group experiences, he's got the understanding of what helps people to get hold of the things that are being said. And so counselors have stated, I first heard this when I went into ministry back in 1968. Yeah, long time ago. And I heard this, and then here about 10 to 15 years ago, when I was preparing some information on marriage, I found the same statistic to be around. In other words, this is something that needs to be heeded. There's 4 key areas of problems in marriage. Now, let me say this. We've got men here that are married. Some very long, others newer. And then, of course, this material can be very helpful. We got many young men that are here that aren't married. And this, what I'm sharing today, this is what marriage should be like. This is what marriage can be like. So even though you are not married, maybe not even engaged so as to anticipate it soon, the fact of the matter is, this is beneficial to marriage. 4 key areas. 1 is finances. 2 is relatives. 3 is religion. And the 4th is sex. Whenever counselors deal with somebody, they'll find that one of these 4 areas is the core of the couple's problems. Now, there may be maybe more than one area that gets involved, okay? But it'll trace back. You know which one's the biggest? Finances. And now, I don't have the time I could take all of this session to deal just with these four things. But the relatives, that can be a source of problem in marriage. And the way I often put it, that's when in-laws become outlaws. Okay? You know, having a good relationship with your in-laws is important. I knew of a widow one time that got married, and she was, not everybody in the family was in favor of the second marriage. And one very wisely said, you know, we're going to have to live with him because he'll be our mother's husband. And therefore, I need to do all that I can to get along with him. Now, that man was wise, okay? And but that relative is an area problem. Religion is an area problem. In our circles, we would say the biggest area is when a saved person marries an unsaved person. That's what the Bible calls an unequal yoke. That's going to be a problem. Oh, when they're, you know, starry-eyed and having a great time together, and, you know, it doesn't seem to be a big deal. But then when the baby comes along, and then the baby gets old enough to go to Sunday school, and the fella says, sweetheart, I'm going to take Freddie back to where I went to Sunday school. I'm going to enroll him. What? You're going to enroll him there? I want him to go, and then she names her church. Now you got a problem, you see. The kid's going to suffer from it. Religion can be a problem when you have, maybe they're two Christians. They marry in an equal yoke as far as they're both saved. But you got one that wants to outright live for the Lord, and the other one that is very happy to just be nominal. That's going to cause a problem. A girl ought to, and I know you're not the girl's part, but a girl ought to look for a man who is at least her equal in spirituality. And what she ought to be looking for is a man who is beyond her in his walk with the Lord. Now what that means for us fellas is we ought to be at least on the same level as the girl we would be interested in, and really we ought to be exceeding her. Because you can't lead her if you're behind her. And we're supposed to be the spiritual leader in a home. Which, that's where religion again becomes a problem. And that is when the man doesn't lead. I didn't say drive. Too many men. They don't know a whole lot what the Bible teaches about marriage, but they know that part about the man supposed to be in charge. And boy, they'll drive that home until they drive her away. Yeah. Oh, she'll still live there. But, no, you lead the wife. Best way to lead in that case is by example. It's important. All right, so we got relatives and religion, and sex can be a problem. I've heard it. Oh, man, it's crazy. You know, he's over sex. He wants to go to bed two or three times a day. Or sometimes you'll hear, he never even touches me. No matter how I present myself at night, he's never interested in me. Okay, so sex can be a problem. There needs to be, I'm going to talk some about that, but there needs to be a compatibility and a mutualness regarding the matter of sex. Then finances. I had a fellow tell me one time, if you don't have your finances in order, they'll get into bed with you. And he just meant they're going to be constantly with you. But I'll tell you, the pressures of finances will affect every area of life. Now, don't go getting super spiritual and super saintish on me and say, well, we'll just pray about it. You know, it'd be better to do some other things before you pray. That's You said, what? Yeah. Or maybe pray for some wisdom about how to do your finances. And then do the finances that way. And there isn't a whole lot that's needed to get finances in order. But finances are a problem. Let's say, imagine that she grew up with a silver spoon in her mouth, and he came from a very ordinary blue-collar family. And she expects to continue living that way. And he can't, no matter what he does. He can't keep up. Even if he works a second job, which is now going to affect some of these other areas. He just can't do it. And so, finances is important. So listen, fellas, when you find a girl, you remember that. If you find a girl whose dad, all he did is what he could do. And don't think that just because you're in love, that's going to take care of that. You need to talk that out, paper and pencil, as to what you can do, what you can provide, how she's going to handle it. I don't know. I've never been married. How do I know what to say? We got a man back there who could probably give you some ideas. There's men here at this church that you know that you could look to, and you could go to them and talk with them. Listen, whenever you go to somebody for counseling, you're never obligated to do what they say.
That's right.
You're obligated to listen, and you certainly ought to consider it, but you're not committing yourself to do what they say. You're getting their input. You're getting their ideas. Now, I had couples come to me for marriage counseling, and I'd ask them, do you want a permanent fix, or do you want to just get through this immediate problem? Because if all you want to do is get through this immediate problem, I'm going to tell you the answer. There's no need to come back, and you do it, and that takes care of it. But if you want to be dealt with so as to get your life and your marriage in order, okay, a permanent situation, that's another matter. For that, we're going to have several sessions. But even in them several sessions, you're not obligated. But you'd be a fool to not seek counsel, to not seek out wise people. And so finances, can be a problem. And they affect every other area, okay? You can think and imagine. I don't want to take the time today, but you can think and imagine how finances could affect every one of these areas. And I know that generally we don't deal with these things in our fundamental circle. Okay. The things that I'm talking about here, that I had in the notes, the four things, which is finance, relatives, religion. It's that fourth one, sex. We don't deal with sex in our fundamental church circles. You men who have attended other churches, I often felt there ought to be some sex education classes in the church. Now, I never had them. I just didn't think that the church could stand it, could handle it. But to bring in Christian medical doctors who could deal with things from that perspective, bring in pastors who were experienced, let's say, in the counseling realm and the kind of problems that can be met. But you say, well, that ought to be dealt with in the home. Yeah, that's what the Christian people. That's what the church said back in the 60s when the schools wanted to do sex education. That's what the church people said. That ought to be dealt with in the home. But you know what? They never dealt with it in the home. I know some of you don't have TV, and so I'll have to try and describe this. But the commercial is for a particular kind of insurance, I think. Shows a dad sitting in the car and his boy's next to him, about 12, 13 years old. He's sitting next to him, and he said, well, son, there's been some things that I've been wanting to talk to you about. You're getting a bit older now, and there's something, and the kid's sitting over there rolling his eyes. He's got his phone, and he's afraid Dad's going to go into this, you know. And the man said, so I've been wanting, and he's getting nervous too about, you know, starting a conversation. He wants to talk about the birds and the bees. That's the way we used to say when you sex talk, okay? And so just about that time, the tow truck pulls up behind, and the boy says, "Here it is." Kid tries to breathe through relief, and he says, "Well, son, if you ever need to, you come to me and we'll talk about these things." Yeah, the church said the school's not the place for it. I shared the same concerns, how they would do it, what they would say, how it would be conducted. I understand that concern. But what was the alternative? To learn it like most of us older fellas did out in the streets. And I've got something to say about that as we move along here. What is marriage? Dictionary says it's a close, intimate union, the act of uniting two parties, united in wedlock, having a spouse, closely joined, conjugal, to join together, a relationship between a husband and a wife. Defines marriage. Marriage and your church life. Do you know they really go hand in hand? I dare say you will not have a solid Christian service life if you have a weak marriage. Okay? Because our marital condition reveals our condition with the Lord. Now, I didn't say you can't be faithful to church. Okay? You can be faithful to church. You can hold offices and responsibilities in the church, and everything can be great. But one of the things that I have become more and more almost obsessed with, there is a difference between Christianity and churchianity. And a lot of people have sitting in the pews of our good fundamental churches, all that they have is a churchianity. All the kids, hey, how many people have you heard when they've grown up say, "Well, I don't go to church anymore"? Met this frequently in visitation. "I don't go to church anymore." "Well, why not?" "Oh, man, when we were growing up, every time the church doors were open, we were there. We had to go every time. I got tired of it. Man, when I got to a point where I didn't have to go anymore, I quit going." That's because those parents had churchianity. That's right. Now, they may have been born again. They may have been saved. But what they were demonstrating was the church, where they should have been demonstrating Jesus Christ. Now, if they lived a close, godly relationship with Jesus Christ, that would lead them to the church. And the kids would still go to church every time the doors were open. What the kids would be seeing in the parents was Jesus Christ. Not just First Baptist Church of Podunkville. They would be seeing Jesus Christ in the parent. Now, they still have to make their own choices about what they're going to live. But I tell you this, I doubt that you would hear them say, "Yeah, I'm not going to church anymore. All my dad and mom did was love God all the time. All they did was serve Jesus all the time." Get the difference?
Yes.
Christianity? Churchianity? That is, I believe, a key critical point. Now, our pastor, preachers we have come in, when they preach to us about living for the Lord and all, that's what they're talking about. Living the Christian life. The only time you hear church promoted is as one aspect of obedience. A place of service. But like I say, when that stems out of your love for the Lord. In other words, the kids ought to hear you talking about the Lord at home, not just the church. What are they going to think's important to you if all they hear about is Black Creek Baptist Church, Black Creek Baptist Church, Black Creek Baptist Church? What are they going to think? They're going to think, wow, that's what's important to my parents. You say, what's wrong with that? They ought to be hearing about Jesus Christ. And then when you do refer to the church, they're going to understand it's because of Jesus Christ. Well, oh, yeah. God created both, didn't He? He created marriage, and He created the church. But He wants us to have the church in the right place. What's God's reasoning in marriage? In Genesis chapter 2 and verse 18, and I know I'm not having you turn to it because I have material I want to get over. And, I've had people say to me, well, you never turned to that scripture. Yeah, and they never took the time to write it down and look it up later. They were really interested. No, they were just being critical. But God's reasoning for marriage in Genesis 2:18 says, "And the Lord God said, it is not good that the man should be alone." And that's still true. Now, the Apostle Paul, he talks about some that seems to be God's will and specific purpose for their life to be alone. There are times where for women the same thing is true. So there's exceptions to that. But in general, God's will is that a man would be married. He needs a helpmeet. And so Genesis 2:18 says, "I will make him an helpmeet for him." A helpmeet. He didn't say, "I'm going to make a housekeeper for him." Didn't say, "I'm going to make a laundry lady for him." So I'm going to make an help meet for him. You know what that term help meet means? To complete. You see, a man without a woman is not complete unless it's God's will that man live alone. Okay? And then that's for other things God wants him to accomplish that he can do more so if he doesn't have the responsibilities of a wife and a family. Okay, more so. You notice that? He can do that more so. You and I who have a wife and family, we can do these things. But obviously that takes so much time. Where somebody that's single and that's God's will for their life, then they, you see, are able to do like we do, only more so, because they don't have to take the time with these other duties. Now that's what Paul teaches. And so he wants someone to complete him. Now, why is physical intimacy so important? It's important because men need the physical, the biological release, I'm going to call it. And this so greatly varies. Every 2-3 days, or it can be less. Okay? A man needs that. God made man in that manner. Okay? And it's a vital part of a husband and wife relationship. And it can't be avoided without negative consequences. Now listen, there's times where you may have physical problems. Good night. Things are different. You fellas that don't know any different. Us older guys, we know that. You know, you see TV advertisements for men that have ED. Oh. Do you remember when you saw that when you were in your 20s and 30s? Did you see an ad for that? No way, man. As a matter of fact, you didn't even talk about that sort of thing with your best buddy. You know, depending on how your doctor or what his personality was, you might talk to him about it. okay? Things are different. Things are different. And what these, but listen, there's always exceptions. I fiddle with things. See, that's where chords go in there. A man or a woman can have a problem. They can have a physical problem. They can have a condition. Some diseases affect sex drive and sex life. And so, you know, you've always got to adjust things according to that. I remember when I was in my 40s, and we saw this elderly couple at church. They must have been in their 60s. I look back now, and geez, I wish I was in my 60s. But we were, like I say, we were maybe in our 40s, and I remember asking her one time, I said, I wonder if they still have sex. Do you think they still might have sex? You know, they were just in their 60s. I can tell you now, fellas, people in their 60s and 70s and 80s,
yes, sir,
still have sex. No kidding. That old? Yeah, it happens. It's the way God made people. But things affect that. There's health conditions that come, like with age, and that can make a difference. And so you say, here again, you know, maybe you're thinking to yourself, what are we talking about that at church? I could say this again, but I'm going to say it here. Where should we talk about it? If we don't talk about it at church, if our young people don't learn about this sort of thing at church, where are they going to learn it? Who created? God created male and female. God created man. God created man to reproduce. So that means, that's a nice fancy way of saying, God created all aspects of sex. It's the world that took it and perverted it. Sex is not dirty. Sex is not dirty. It's the abuse and the misuse of sex that is dirty. Where should people learn it? Out in the world? That doesn't seem right. If God created it and has things to say about it, it seems like it ought to be learned there. A questionnaire was given out to a group of Christians, to ladies, okay? I think Pat gave these questions to ladies when she dealt with this. Good night, it could be 15 years ago now. What advice would you give to your husband if you could tell him what's on your mind about physical intimacy? And here's what the answers that she got, and she got different answers, and she, you know, tried to condense them into one. Have romantic physical contact other than for sex. Intimacy at night begins as soon as the day begins. One of the ladies said, if you want a good night, treat her right in the morning and afternoon. Mm-hmm. Another one said, to fulfill sexual communication, improve other communication during the day. Talk with them. Talk with them about things they want to talk about. I figured this one out with my son. You know what I found out with him? I wanted to do things with him. And he wanted to do things with his dad. But you know what? He wanted to do baseball. I wanted to do painting the garage. He wanted to do basketball, and I wanted to do changing the spark plugs. And you know the excuse I made? Well, if the kid doesn't learn these things, you know, I've got to teach him these things. You know what? I was right, but I went about it wrong. I used what I wanted to do in place of what he wanted to do. In the same way in marriage. We need to do things the ladies want to do. Now I'm gonna cut to the heart, fellas. You need to go shopping with them. Thank you. I told you I'm gonna cut right to the heart. Now, most men don't like to shop. Okay? And definitely don't like to shop where women shop. I swear, when we go in, you should go into OEM Mall on the Bon-Ton end. That woman has antennas and eyeballs like, you know, what is it, on SquarePants, Mr. Crack, okay? You got eyes like that. She can spot every red and yellow sign on any rack for half the store. And she's going to look at that rack, and she's going to look at every thing that's on. Now, actually, found a very nice-looking blouse at Bon-Ton, she told me, and hung it for just $6. You know, some men wonder, well, how in the world can his wife afford that clothing? You know, she spent less for that there than she would have spent for it at Salvation Army thrift store. But it doesn't happen. You can't. When I shop, I want something, I run in, I want to find it, I want to get it. Now, I comparison shop, so I'm going to hit every store in town that sells that product. Okay? I'm only looking for that one product. But, no, really, need to go shopping with your wife. There's other things that they want to do. But, you know, it's a shopping thing. What you do is you look, sweetheart, you want to go shopping, we'll take you shopping. Now, you know this is not hard for me. I'll look through five racks with you. I'll look through three racks with you. Or I'll be with you for 15 minutes, and then I'm going out front on that bench. And I'll sit out there, and you take your time, and I'll be out there until you're ready to go to the next store. And she'll take, I sure hope she would, take pity on you. In fact, as you're going along to start with. Or, you know, I'm looking, I see Chris here and the four kids, you know, and he might just simply say, sweetheart, would you like to go shopping? And after she gets up off of the floor, she'll say yes, and he'll say, look, I'll take care of the kids this afternoon so you can go shopping. Sounds like a deal to me, huh? And but the point is, we need to do things the ladies like to do. We need to do things our wife likes to do. And fellas who are not married, if you don't start out that way with girls, if you don't do things they want to do, and you got to talk with them. You got to communicate. And communication is interaction. My wife is a communicator. I'm a talker. As long as I have an ear and a subject, no stopping me. She's a communicator. She'll sit down and chit-chat with somebody. She'll hear what they have to say. She'll respond. And she'll listen. And then she'll have some input. Watch this in life. There are communicators and there are talkers. And if when you're going with a girl, fellas, or in our marriage, even us older men, we need to be able to communicate, to talk with them, to listen to what they're interested in. And it and listen to what they... Oh, and don't make this mistake. Sure. If you're going to communicate during television, turn it off. Okay? Or sit in a way that you can't see it. Because when you're talking about it and some action comes on in that program that you've been watching and she's talking and you're going, yes. And after a while, then she stops talking. And so I say, wait a minute, you're not talking anymore. Why should I? You're not listening to me anymore.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable.
Been there, done that more than once. And so, what deters you from wanting intimacy with your spouse? One answer was his not talking or only talking about things that are of interest to him. What deters you from wanting intimacy with your spouse? Schedule some time for us to do things together. It's an important thing. To do things together. And then another woman said this, I don't like being treated like a maid all day and a lover at night. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she had a way with words. This woman said, being a grouch all day because of being overscheduled, and then he wants to be romantic at night. Yeah. You know, and listen, if a man is doing what he can, a wife will understand. There's some days that just things pile up and you can't help it. And they understand that we're on an overload in those kind of things. But when we do it constantly, and then because we have a biological need, when it's time to go to bed, I like what one man did. He went up to his wife and he said, here's an aspirin. Aspirin? What for? He said, well, that's for your headache. And she says, I don't have a headache. He said, good, let's go to bed. You see, for you younger, and you older younger fellows, when a woman doesn't want to go to bed and have sex with her husband, it's not uncommon. She'll say, well, I can't, sweetheart. I've got a headache. Yeah. So I thought that was pretty good. Here's an aspirin. And so, but you see, there. And when it comes to marriage, there's spiritual, mental, and physical. The spiritual part of marriage gives strength to a marriage. Yeah, well, that's what I wanted to hear about. I think if we hear more about the spiritual side of marriage, everything will be okay. You think? How's that working out? Spiritually, we need to be united for a strong marriage. A united base. That's why I say husband and wife doing the same thing. You say, well, I'm trying, but my wife just isn't as interested as I am. And you know your wife. You may need to just talk with her and ask her about it. But the other thing to do is to pray about it. And then ask God, what can I do to change that in my way of living? marriage is a commitment. And so we need to be committed. Close the door on divorce. Close the door on divorce. We knew a missionary couple that was up in, I think it was British Columbia. We began to hear they were having problems. And I communicated with them and told them that our church would pay for them to go to see counselors. And he communicated back and said, it's too late. She's left. You see, many a man, when he goes to the mission field, he's taken up with his ministry. You want to know how to pray for your missionary? This is an area. The man, pray for their strength of their marriage. We had a missionary to Brazil who told that to our congregation. He said, you want to know how to pray? He said, pray that we'll have a strong marriage. And this younger couple, the man went off. He was taken up with his ministry. All day long, he had things to do. She sat at home with a few kids. Now, the man from the church showed an interest in her. To start with, it wasn't to make her unfaithful. But he just took time to talk. She needed someone to listen. And it ended up that the missionary couple was divorced. She ended up marrying the other fella. And then she communicated this to us. I should have waited for the Lord. She did not know that God was already working in her husband's heart about what he wasn't doing and what he should be doing. But he had not yet come to the place where he acknowledged these things. And she ended up leaving. And he, of course, came off the field. And sad things. But that doesn't just... It happens a whole lot more in churches like ours. You've got to close the door on divorce. Don't get married if divorce is an option for you. Okay? But you just close the door on it. And here's a statistic that's very interesting. Tim LaHaye, he was a Christian leader. He's dead and in heaven now. But he did a survey of 3,404 people. Now, I'm told if 1,500 or more are considered a valid survey. Okay, so he had what would be a valid survey. In the area of sex, the satisfaction level of Christians was 81%. And at that time, the satisfaction level of non-Christians that responded was just 58%. And interesting, at that same time frame, Red Book magazine did a similar survey. They surveyed 100,000 women. And it's Red Book, so it wouldn't be a Christian-based thing. But religiously minded women were stronger in sexual satisfaction at 71%. So when I say the spiritual aspect of marriage is important, that you and your wife are walking with the Lord and desiring to be with the Lord. Not just coming to church. Now don't hear in that you don't have to come to church. If you heard that, you're missing the whole point. But you know, you need to be walking with the Lord, living for that message today. And it needs to be heeded. And this is interesting too. The LaHaye research. Those Christians who responded considering themselves Spirit-filled most of the time, in other words, being led by the Spirit most of the time, the sexual satisfaction level jumped to 89 from 81. So, you see, sex is a gift from God. And our spiritual walk individually with God and as a couple is involved with it. And then the mental. Our thoughts govern our outlook and our experience. And therefore, we need to have a good mental outlook. We need to do more than just watch SpongeBob. Okay? In other words, reading. Good night. We have such an example in reading and his sons in reading. Now, listen, I'm never going to be able to read at the level he reads. I've gotten some books from him, and I ran out of the day. It was work. It was work. And so, but we need to read. You don't have to watch SpongeBob. You can watch some educational channels, historically educational channels, you know? There's things you can do. There's audio books, right?
Yeah.
Audio books that you can get and have somebody else read to you. And that the benefit of that
is that when you fall asleep, you won't drop the book.
And so, but our mental, you know, when you come home, your wife likes to have some mental interchange with you. Consider this. A young mother spends roughly 8 hours alone with children between, let's say, 3 and 10 years of age. She'd like to have some adult conversation. Okay? You know, if she ended up saying, dude, would you like some kiki? People know that she spent too much time with the kids. And it's time to take her out. But you get the idea? A wife wants some mental interchange on things, again, that she's interested in. I don't know how your wife is, but I've told her already, you either are the most insightful person I have ever met, or you sure do fake it very well. No matter what I talk about, she sits there and listens. I think she's ardently interested. And one time I stopped talking and said, you don't really care about this, do you? She said, no, but I care about you. And you're interested. That's the level of interaction that I ought to be reciprocating to her. You see? Reciprocating to her. Regarding the matter of physical intimacy, sex, the Father commanded it in Genesis 1:28, be fruitful and multiply. The Son, Jesus, commended it in Matthew 19:5-6, they twain shall be one flesh. And the Holy Spirit confirmed it in 1 Corinthians 7:9, if they cannot contain, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn. Sex is not dirty. God gave it. Now, He didn't give it like you see in the streets, like you see in movies, like you see on television. He didn't give it that way. Sexuality is not condemned by God. Misuse of it is what God condemns. And so we need to consider those aspects. Now I'm going to give you a page here. Practical scriptural applications to marriage. You're going to find Matthew 7:3, the mote and beam thing. Yeah, we'll apply that to marriage. And then, how about Matthew 7:12, do unto others. The golden rule, do unto others as you have them do unto you. There, that's a marriage verse. Right? See? In our marriage, do unto others as you have them do unto you. And then Mark 10:43-44 talks about serving each other. There's another marriage scripture. Oh, not typically viewed that way. Oh, well, that's for in my church family. It doesn't say that anywhere in the context. It just says we're to serve each other. And I'll tell you, when serving somebody else sitting in the pew becomes more important than serving the woman who sits in your house, you got problems. There's more. I'll pass this stuff out. What I'm going to do is pass it around. And this is the way it goes with me. I always have more material than I should. All right. Take one and pass them on. This first one is a questionnaire. On the very back of it, it'll say, this is done as a thought provoker. Now, you can circle them. You can mark them. It's your copy. I'm not going to collect them back. I'm not going to ask you for what you marked. But it's a thought provoker regarding our relationship with our marriage. And so, you take it and you look it over and you hopefully some of the things that it asks will be of profit. Now make sure all the kids get one as well. Okay, good. Some of the things that are on this
this questionnaire, you'll have thought of. Hopefully there'll be something, some things there that you maybe haven't thought of. And so I hope you'll look them over. All right, then the other one here we're going to pass out. Now, I'm giving you this, and you fellows that aren't married, it says, reasons why I chose my mate.
Well, obviously you didn't choose a mate yet, so... but what you can do with that is just look at those questions and convert them to what do I want in a mate that I would choose. And so, it says here in 5, list 3 areas that you think your husband or wife could change to make themselves a better marriage partner. Well, now you fellas aren't going to answer that one, that aren't married, you know. But what you could answer in that one would be something along the next one. You maybe can't answer that one, but the next one lists 3 things that you could change about yourself to make you a good marriage partner. Okay, and obviously to us men that are married. When I use these in marital counseling, I give them out to them, I have them fill them out and bring them back. And then we talk over them. And I'd say, all right, Henrietta, it says here, what are 3 things you could change about yourself? And I'd ask her to tell them. Okay? And then I'd ask him to tell his. You know what? And the other one there, list 3 areas that you think your husband could change. It was not uncommon that 1 or 2 of them that he thought he ought to change to be better were 1 or 2 that she thought he should change to be better. In other words, they knew each other in the same way, toward the wife. And so you can take this along and look it over again. We're not going to collect them and come back and talk about them, though. That might be interesting. And then the other one that I have here, and that's this last in practical scriptural applications. Okay? And that's promote the being, the do unto others, so on. But also some don'ts in marriage. Don't harp, grumble, and complain. And 2, this is important. I hope you can pass and listen at the same time. That's multitasking. Don't put her down to herself or to others. If you want to stifle your marriage, you just complain about her in front of others. If you do that, even if it's something that others know is a problem in her life, if you do that, you have just shut the door on developing a strong relationship. Now that door can be opened up, but better not to shut it. Don't compare her to others. Man, when you first get married, she's gonna, if you had a girlfriend, she's gonna ask you something about her. You can't lie. But you be real careful how you answer. Old boy is right. Don't take worldly advice. Be sure your advice has a biblical base. Now, you can hear something in the world by way of marital advice. If it can be substantiated from the scriptures, well, then that's truth. But so much of it isn't. Don't compare yourself to other men. You're God's creation. Develop who you are. Oh, I just wish I could be like him. Don't say to your wife, well, I wish I could be like so-and-so.
She might just agree with you. That would not be good. Don't take her for granted. Huh? Don't take her for granted. And tell her you like her. You know, I used to teach, bring her some flowers. Seeing those funeral baskets up there. I used to take her flowers. Well, you see, when we had a funeral, just like here, there's some flowers. Well, then I'd go around and I'd pick one or two out of each basket. They were never missed. And I'd take them to her. And somehow it never dawned on her where these were coming from. It's just not like her. And so one time she said something, I said, well, I'm in the funeral basket. She didn't want them anymore. Those are flowers for dead people. Okay. I thought you were showing your love for me.
Oh, yeah.
And I told my son, I said, don't forget to take your wife some flowers for her, or after they were married for a little while. And he said, Dad, that won't communicate love to her. And then he got a book on What Says Love, I think may have been the title. But Peter says to know your wife. And my son told me, he said, my wife wouldn't be thrilled with flowers. She'd be thrilled that I thought about her. But he said, what I need to do for her is paint the porch. There's things she wants me to do, and my doing them show her that I love her. Now, Pat, she wants those things done, but not to show her love. She wants them done because she thinks I ought to do them. And she wants flowers. And she wants, you know, I'll be out, she loves fruit. So if I'm out in the grocery store, I'll stop by and I'll pick up whatever fruit's in season. Take her some. Vegetables. She likes sugar snap peas. So when I'm in Walmart, I know right where they are and go over and I grab that bag, $2.48, and give her a bag of sugar snap peas. Okay? And that works good for her. So don't take your wife for granted. You know your wife. Know what she wants to see. Now listen, when you're in a dating relationship, these things would apply. You can do these things to show that. And then some do's in marriage, and then there's some things on the back of it as well. And then I hear them upstairs and I see the clock in the wall. I just try not to look at it. I hope these things are helpful. Okay? I hope they're helpful. Very good. Father in heaven, we need your spirit to work in us. Lord, help us to help me to be the husband that I need to be. In Jesus' name, amen. Oh, yeah, finance meeting.
Yeah. Can I get some of these copies when you get a chance, Pastor?
Copies of what?
You're all three of those? Because I have a couple that was going to help them with marriage counseling.
Oh.
Man, I didn't know you knew that. I would love to sit down with you.
Okay.
Well, maybe then I can either do it or I'm doing it. Okay. You know, I've taken a lot of courses on how to